Okay, this is Yvan Tina, still in Perth, Neolife Conference. I have the pleasure today to be with
Markus Schmidt from BioFaction in Vienna.
And Georg Dremmel from BCL.
Okay, so can you please introduce briefly both each of you, just what you do in life and
I'm the founder of BioFaction. Yeah. We're an organization in Vienna who's doing technology assessment, science communication, and supporting the collaboration between art and science.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm an artist. I work in with a group called BCL, mainly between art and biology.
Okay, so we're here together in Perth for the Neolife Conference, and you told me earlier in the discussion that you're going to move your BioFiction festival to Japan this year or next year. But before that, just can you please come back to the story of your festival, where it comes from? Mm-hmm. And
just so we started in 2011, mm-hmm. organizing for the first time the BioFiction Science, Art and Film Festival, yeah. which is the first of its kind internationally, festival on synthetic biology and its societal ramification. So synthetic biology is a new form of genetic engineering, and we're interested in discussing its environmental health and societal ramifications for the future, inviting scientists that work on the bench and in the lab with mm-hmm. these techniques, but also social scientists, artists, philosophers, designers, people from different walks of life, in order to shed different perspectives on the context in which synthetic biology is developing. And one core element of the festival is a short film competition. Yeah. So we had a call for films and received in 2011 130 films, and we had a second BioFiction festival in 2014 where we received 100 films. Mm-hmm. We had a jury who selected the best films, turned out to be 60 films in 2014, mm-hmm. which we showed over the course of 3 days. We had a conference, panel discussions, we had artists present showing their work, performance, we had biohackers showing their work so people could come in and get their hands dirty on interactive tables. So after these 3 days, mm-hmm. We decided we'd like to send the films as the core element of the festival around the world in order to show the different places. And we started in November 2014, and we have been to many, many different locations in Europe. We have sent the festival to the US. We've sent it to several locations in Asia, in Australia, we're going to Japan. Georg organized a BioFiction festival in Japan. We're going to Brazil in a few weeks, and
we'd like to go to Africa, right?
We like to go to Africa. We even go to Antarctica next March, so we need to also take it to Africa.
Okay, this is an open call for any artists in Africa.
Absolutely,
who would like to host this. So, do your proposition, the movies, the presentation, the topics that you address in the festival evolve for time, or do you keep the same proposition and you tour it for the world? Or do you have any change that occur?
Well, the films that we received and selected for the BioFiction Festival in Vienna in October 2014, mm-hmm. These are the films that are on tour, that are traveling around the world, no?
Yeah.
And they will travel around the world until the next festival, where we receive new films.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess, Georg, how did you first meet him, and why do you think it's important that the BioFiction comes to Japan? I mean, what was the idea behind that?
Actually, we met at last year's Making Life Symposium in Finland for the first time. But I think also in Japan we have a kind of emerging community of people interested in art and biology, and I think BioFiction would be a very good addition to this community. And I think we will not only show the films, but we will try to contextualize it with kind of local people. Japanese researchers and others to kind of contextualize it more in the kind of Asian viewpoint.
Talking about contextualization, so I took a few notes in our previous discussion. So can you also just contextualize now the conceptual framework behind that? Because you were talking about this idea of star-based and all issues around surrounding xenobiology, exobiology.
Yeah. So Okay, this actually leads back to this Making Life workshop, which we both were part last year, which happened in Helsinki at the Aalto University at the Biophilia Lab. And this was designed to elucidate responses from artists who work with synthetic biology. So what might be possible futures for art and synthetic biology? And through kind of a complicated group forming process, we happened to be in the same team, and the team was called Star Beasts. So Marcus, what is Star Beast in the original Starbeast, sense? Yeah.
So in 2010, I published a paper about xenobiology. Mm-hmm. And xenobiology, just in brief, is kind of one type of synthetic biology. It aims to change the biochemical structure of living beings. So normally all forms of life, they use DNA mm-hmm. as information storage and have 22 or 23 different amino acids, but it's always the same 22 amino acids and it's always same DNA with the same four bases to store information.
Okay.
But actually it's possible to use different chemicals mm-hmm. that fulfill the same principles, mm-hmm. but they are distinct from the ones used in nature. And all of the species we know in nature use the same biochemical structure. So now in the laboratory, some scientists experiment with exchanging these bases, these amino acids, and so on. And this, the term for it would be xenobiology, so a different type of biology. Actually, the term xenobiology has in the past used in a different sense. It was an analogy to astrobiology. Yep. So in the 60s, 1960s, this term was first mentioned. People were looking for a name for possible life on other planets outside Earth. So they came up with exobiology, astrobiology, and xenobiology.
Yeah.
And it was a famous science fiction writer who published a book called Star Beast.
Star Beast.
Heinlein, right?
Hmm?
Heinlein.
Heinlein, yeah. Richard.
Robert.
Robert Heinlein, yeah. So he used the term xenobiology in his book. In a science fiction book describing life on different planets.
Yeah.
In a way, it's a very at that time people could not foresee that scientists in the laboratory would create different life forms. So the only way to get to different life forms, they would have to move to other planets.
Sure, exactly.
So there was a different form of life. Xeno means actually foreigner, but in a friendly sense. So not in a hostile sense. It's a foreigner that if he comes to your house, you invite him to some drinks and food and so on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So xenobiology is a foreign biology, one that you're not used to, life as we don't know it.
Yeah.
And Starbeast was the title of this book, and since we were also, the idea behind the project Starbeast was to as if I can say it in a few sentences, was to send a little probe, kind of a nano rocket, out to exoplanets, to planets in different solar systems, and to take with them traces of earthly organisms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so we would actually intentionally populate or inoculate different planets with life,
mm-hmm.
and we thought that the name of the science fiction book would be a nice title as well for our work. And it's called there's not the full name. It's called Star Beast and
Interstellar Zeitgeber,
exactly.
or Timegiver, and that kind of Timegiver refers back to on Earth, I think 3.5 billion years ago, there happened a great oxidation event,
uh-huh.
which was facilitated by cyanobacteria.
Thank you for coming back.
Yes, so we need to backtrack a little bit to kind of give the whole context of the work.
Yeah.
So on Earth, we had the cyanobacteria, and they were responsible for the first mass holocaust on Earth. So more than 99.9% of all life on Earth died at this point, because the cyanobacteria, they excreted oxygen.
Yeah.
So they used photosynthesis to get the energy from the sunlight, but their byproducts was oxygen, mm-hmm. which at that time was toxic for other life on Earth.
Okay, this is what you call the Great Oxidation Event.
I think it's called the Great Oxidation Event, so GOE.
Okay.
But cyanobacteria are also very interesting because they're one of the first life forms who had a so-called circadian rhythm.
Uh-huh.
So an internal clock
mm-hmm.
that is mapped to the rotation period of the Earth.
Yeah.
So any life form that that has an internal clock similar or kind of equal to the rotation period of the planet it's living on has an evolutionary advantage. So we were kind of thinking in the,
with that project, this project.
So if we send another species, another life forms to another planet, it would be an evolutionary advantage if this if these life forms could also match the rotation period of the new planet, the new exoplanet. So these are planets, Earth-like planets, which circle other suns, right? And we together we kind of created this kind of satellite-like device, which houses a kind of an evolutionary machine. In which the cyanobacteria were kind of are subjected to evolutionary pressures to kind of adjust their circadian rhythms to the length of the new planet.
So my one of just first question I would so is does any kind of life forms on our planet have cyanobacteria in it, or you want to send cyanobacteria?
You mean on the other planet?
Yeah, I mean, if I take any piece of grass from the Earth, does it contain any cyanobacteria, or you want specifically to use cyanobacteria to sell it, to send it to exoplanets, basically?
Well, what Georg just said, the great oxidation event, it's like what a kind of a traumatic period for early Earth, but it was also the reason that we are now came into existence, because we are dependent on oxygen to survive. And the cyanobacteria is a kind of a exemplary species, an exemplary organism that represents the change of a planet to make it more habitable for organisms like us. And so it's a kind of a symbolic organism. And so we picked up cyanobacteria, which you can find in water maybe, but actually there are also some are also in the air. You can find it practically everywhere.
So it's everywhere.
So it's everywhere, but of course they're even in clouds. But at best they grow in water.
Okay.
So we had cyanobacteria from a lab of Hideo
Osaki from Metaforest, Hasunde University.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to have an organism which on which we can exercise evolutionary pressure. So which needs to be able to kind of change over time.
So the question is, why do you need, I mean, of course I understand the goal and the project, but can you simulate the same kind of rotation on Earth? Like you can model maybe a different rotation than...
Actually, we don't model the rotation, but the day and night period. So the reason why the cyanobacteria has this 24-hour rhythm is that it, in doing photosynthesis, it actually also has to use some energy in doing photosynthesis. So when it's dark, there's no use in providing this energy for photosynthesis, so it shuts down the photosynthetic machinery, and when the light comes back, it switches it on again. So it's more efficient in harvesting light. And if you send it to a different exoplanet somewhere out there, we don't know what the planetary rotation time is. It's very unlikely that it's also 24 hours. It could be 30 hours or 2 hours, whatever. So it would have it would need to adapt to the local condition of this exoplanet. And
how long?
But it depends. If the probe flies there, it has to find out what is the rotational period. If we cannot find from Earth,
this is the point where we go from a concrete project to a speculative project.
So obviously this is a prototype, and there, this cannot be sent out for real.
You don't have any an idea about the time it needs to adapt itself to the rotation.
Well, I would say, would put it the other way around. It takes the time that it needs to adapt to the rotation is much shorter than the time it needs to travel to the exoplanet. So it has enough time to adapt to it. And what we and actually the daylight length or this rotational period is just one example of the many adaptations a bacteria would have to do in order to be able to live there, because there might be a different atmosphere, different chemistry, you know, the radiation could be stronger or less intense. So there are many things that have to be changed. We picked up the daylight length as a kind of an indicator, also a symbolic characteristic for change.
So one of the things that you was telling me, Georg, earlier is that the aside question that arise from this is that by sending a cyanobacteria or any life forms to that to another planet, you take the risk of killing other maybe an existing life form that is already there. So what do you? How do you deal with that question?
Yeah, from the viewpoint of if life on this starched planet would already exist, mm-hmm. this would be our probe would be then xenobiology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exobiology.
Sorry. Yeah. Exobiology. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it would be the outside coming mm-hmm. in. So, but then what would happen if there would be two life forms on the same planet?
Yeah.
Most likely there would be competition, and most likely one of them would win.
Of course. Or symbiotic
relationship. Or they could create a symbiotic relationship. Mm. But again, there are no symbiotic relationships on Earth now. So there's only one type of life here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but maybe in the past there were, but there's no trace of it anymore.
So what about the idea of, other life forms than what we know. Assuming that if you say that cyanobacteria basically help build life as we know it today by creating oxygen, it means that you assume that there were other life forms before that. Yes or no?
Yes, anaerobic, or ones that were less dependent on oxygen. There was also oxygen before the Great Oxidation period, but in a lesser concentration. So the concentration raised, I think, from a few percentage to 21%. So
there
was a big difference. There were other species before. There still are anaerobic or organisms that cannot grow or grow also without oxygen.
So like they usually live deep in soil or in conditions where there's no oxygen around. But still, they share the same chemistry,
mm-hmm.
right? It's just a different energy source.
So I guess you assume that your project is clearly a colonial project.
It's a colonial doesn't go far enough. It's a cosmic infection that we have started.
Yes.
The biggest bioterrorist activity ever done in the history of the universe. So yeah, it's clearly a kind of a panspermic idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. To spread out germs mm-hmm. all over the universe. And what you said about coming into competition with existing life forms.
Yes.
Actually, there is no indication of other life forms out in the universe than on the planet, which is probably mostly to the lack of measurements and analytical tools to find whether there is life or not, because we just see a little speck of light from these exoplanets. They're reflected from the sun, or when the mother sun is wobbling a little bit. We don't even see the planet, so there's no way right now to say if there is life or not. So by sending it there, it's either going to compete
mm-hmm.
with existing life,
yeah.
or it's seeding life where there was no life before.
Okay.
In both cases, life will remain.
Yeah, and just to come back to the biofiction, mm-hmm. First of all, how you call it again? Star Beast will be the theme of the festival? Or?
Oh no, biofiction is not directly connected to Star Beast. The only connection is that we have received financial support
uh-huh.
from a project called SynEnergen, which mm-hmm. is about responsible research and innovation on synthetic biology,
mm-hmm.
which supported the Biofiction Festival and also supported the Making Life workshop series,
yeah.
where, among other corporations, also the Star Beast project were involved. Yeah. I have to say we're not just Georg and myself, but there were also Stephen Fortune,
yeah.
PhD student mm-hmm. and a journalist, and Andy Gracie, an artist involved. So we all together were four people working on this.
On the Star Beast project. Mm-hmm. And you have something else to say?
Yeah, Biofiction Tokyo, 21st of February. If you're there, please come.
Okay, thank you very much.